League play in Pittsburgh.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Well, that's a choice that's easy enough to hear and easy enough to make in the days after 9/11 when the smoke was still rising from the Pentagon. But it gets a lot more complicated when the terrorism itself is homegrown. The arrest of Eric Robert Rudolph this week reminds us that prior to the attack on the Twin Towers, the terrorist threat in America did not just come from Islamic fundamentalists, but from those small and fanatic Christian groups that decry abortion and root their hatred of government in that overblown anti-Semitic prose of the white supremacist. Since 9/11, the administration has led America through a comprehensive reorganization of its security and its justice system. Homeland Security and the Patriot Act are now weapons in the much-vaunted war on terror. The question is, Connection listeners, who's the enemy? Are alleged bomb makers like Eric Rudolph to be seen and treated and hunted and tried like Al-Qaeda members? Is there a difference here in this country between Islamic militant terrorists and Christian militant terrorists? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we'll be speaking shortly with two people who study right-wing hate groups and Christian fundamentalism in America. First, though, to Joel Burgess. Joel is a reporter with the Hendersonville Times News in North Carolina, and he's been covering the story of the capture of Eric Robert Rudolph. And Joel, I gather you're in Murphy right now, is that right?
Actually, no, I'm finally back in Asheville. I got in at about 1:45 last night after running around in the hills of Murphy.
I guess running around also with a bunch of reporters and feds too, huh?
That's right. The media circus has died down since Rudolph was transferred to Asheville and then to Birmingham, but there are still a few of us out there trying to find some of these campsites that Rudolph talked about.
And what did you find?
Well, there's one site that they are calling the summer camp, which is very close to where he was caught, and actually within earshot of a major U.S. highway and within sight of a couple strip malls. And there's a steep climb that leads up to it, and what remained after the FBI was done with it were a few old vegetables, some tar paper, some plywood, and the FBI actually brought out a large sheet of metal on which it looked like Rudolph or whoever was there may have been drying bananas. Now, that was just the summer site. There is a winter site that I tried my darndest to get to yesterday, and apparently other reporters have had a hard time too, but that one is really up on a peak somewhere.
When you look, though, Joel, at how close this fellow was for whatever period of time to civilization, are you left to wonder, you know, whether or not every effort of every government agency was really put into the exercise of trying to find him?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I did get an FBI agent who, of course, wouldn't give his name, who commented yesterday. He said, you know, we've basically taken a lot of heat for not being able to find this guy. But a few years ago, the father of one of the agents flew out on a small private plane and crashed. And that was in 1998, and they still haven't found this plane. So I guess what he was saying is, you know, it's the wilderness is very thick. But again, the point you make is that he was close to civilization. So it's tough to say. They sure spent a lot of money, millions of dollars.
Now, Joel, what do we know at this point about the degree of assistance that he may have received living as he did so close to highways? And, I mean, you don't walk up hills and paths like that with a sheet of plywood on your back without somebody noticing. What did you find out about that?
That's also really up in the air. There haven't been any arrests so far, though everyone suspects that's what the FBI was after. They were looking around to see if, in fact, they could find somebody who aided Rudolph over these 5 years. And people that I've talked to, from Andrews to Peachtree to Murphy, all in this area, all kind of wonder if he had help. And, in fact, there are a lot of people that say, you know, if he'd come to me, I might have helped him.
Now, I read about this woman, Betty Howard, the woman at the Peachtree restaurant in the New York Times, who changed the sign in her diner to say, pray for Eric Rudolph. Now, is that indicative of the way people there feel about him?
Well, yes, but I think you have to really understand what Miss Howard meant. The very next day, it was changed back to the lunch specials. My sense of it, I tried to get in touch with her, but talking with other people around her, is that really what she was saying was rooted in sort of a deeper old-time Christianity, in that you pray for those who have sinned and you pray for those who are in trouble. You know, you pray for the condemned man.
It wasn't a gesture of support for what he'd done then.
No, apparently she had been very upset by some of the reports that she was, in fact, supporting him. And when I did speak with people, commonly what you would find is folks that of course had a mistrust of the federal government. That's not uncommon in this area. And folks also that said, you know, I too am anti-abortion, and some that might even go so far as to say I'm anti-gay. But when it came down to the act of bombing an abortion clinic or a gay nightclub, very few would condone those acts. And so I say that calling him a folk hero is going too far. The caveat is, though, there are those, and you can find them, who, in fact, agreed with these methods that he has been accused of.
Joel, thanks so much for being with us today.
Certainly.
Joel Burgess is a reporter for the Hendersonville Times News. And I'm joined now by Brian Levin, who's joining us from the West Coast. He is a professor of criminal justice and director of the Center on Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And here in the studio with me in Boston, Chip Berlay. He's senior analyst with Policy Research Associates, which studies the political right in the United States, co-author of Right-Wing Populism in America. Chip, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Let's reflect on what we're hearing from Joel. Chip, I'll start with you. Do you think that it's proper or accurate to look at the case of Eric Robert Rudolph in the same way that we look at the case of Al-Qaeda terrorists?
Well, sure. In some ways, yes. And in other ways, no. And I think that's where the discussion should go today, because people are mixing up a lot of different things. They're mixing up religion and religious fundamentalism, and religious fundamentalism that turns to violence. In terms of the Christian right, they're mixing up Christian right evangelicals with Christian identity, which is actually a neo-Nazi.
Christian identity in capital letters. That's a group you're talking about.
Christian identity is a movement. It's a theological movement made up of many individuals and groups that every mainstream Protestant denomination and the Catholic Church denounces as a heresy. And basically, Christian identity is very much distinct from the kind of religious fervor and evangelical and fundamentalist belief that you would normally find in areas in North Carolina. But there are some identity compounds have been identity compounds in North Carolina and in neighboring states.
So we
need to divide this up more.
So where do I mean, we're accurate to call the man, based on what we know now, and he's yet to go to trial, a terrorist.
Yes.
Accurate to call him a Christian, in the associations that have been drawn by people who claim to know him. Again, this, you know, there's more information to come out there. I guess all I'm trying to get to is, where do you pull back at saying that there's a straight line link between a Christian militant terrorist and an Islamic fundamentalist terrorist? Where do you go, no, be careful in understanding there's not similarities at this point?
Well, there are similarities and there are distinctions, and I think in a lot of the reporting the distinctions have been lost. The similarities are obvious. These
right.
are people who turn to violence by claiming God's vengeance is theirs to carry out. And that's the same whether it's Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, whether it's the RSS and BJP in India, two mm-hmm. movements there that engage in violence and are ethno-nationalist. And it's the same whether it's a Christian identity in the U.S. There's also groups that are Christian evangelical or Christian fundamentalist or even Catholic right who attack reproductive rights clinics. And although Eric Rudolph is accused of doing that, he's in Christian identity, which is this sect, which is a neo-Nazi religion. Mm-hmm. And that's very distinct from the more mundane but equally objectionable terrorism of Christian evangelicals and Christian fundamentalists and Catholic rightists who engage in attacks on clinics. So what I'm arguing is that in the rush to see the similarities, we're actually stepping on some very important distinctions.
Brian, do you agree that it's very important to understand the similarities and the differences here?
Yes, and I think an important point to make here, though, and Chip is about as good as it gets when it comes to experts, is that with regard to evangelicals and Catholics, I think there's an important difference, and that is, and I apologize, but I think sometimes the hard left, and that's why I appreciate Chip's distinction here, does paint with too broad a brush. For most Catholics and most evangelicals, they do not remove themselves from society and consider themselves at war with society and want to change through violence. And I think the difference here is the use of violence, that there are certainly fringe radical Catholics, there are fringe evangelicals, but for the most part, they embrace society and the rule of law. And that's where I think we go into the terrorist area. Christian identity also, I think Chip would agree, it is a violent religion, it's a bigoted religion, but most of these people, I would say, are more concerned about removing themselves from society and passively sitting by watching the apocalypse, whereas Rudolph represents a minority, a dangerous minority of that, but not necessarily the majority of Christian identity adherents.
And do you see a difference, Brian, in the way that the administration at the state or the federal level acts on the small groups that you're talking about here?
Certainly, the bulk of the investigative time right now is on foreign terrorism, probably as it should be. But I'll tell you one thing. The war on terrorism has resulted in this casting of a wide net, which is ensnaring all kinds of extremists, from Irv Rubin from the JDL to far-right violent people who are getting locked up on trademark violations. So this wide net...
Are you saying that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing, although, and I think Chip will probably be the person who's a bit more alarmed.
You bet.
That's why we're together. It's important that we don't go over the line with regard to violating civil liberties. But if I'm going to get Al Capone for tax evasion or David Duke from tax evasion, I'm fine with that.
Chip.
I have no problem getting Al Capone with tax evasion. I have a problem with rounding up every Muslim and Arab-looking person in America and sifting through their belongings, trying to see if they've been sending cash to Al-Qaeda. I think that
as most people of goodwill would be. However, one distinction, if I could just interject, that I think is important to make is that the danger from the Islamic radicals, and again, I don't want to get into a boat with some preachers who have claimed that Islam is a violent religion or anything like that. I'm talking about a fringe, violent part of Islam. I am not condemning Islam, but the difference between that and Christian identity is factors such as history, culture, institutions, the stretch of mainstream clerics, the traction it has in these various societies, and the socioeconomic conditions. So when we see, for instance, the chief cleric of Riyadh saying that his hatred for America lasts until the universe collapses and stone liquefies and that Jews should be enslaved, and others saying that, you know, Jews are monkeys and pigs, and when we have neo-Nazi literature having a renaissance in the Middle East, we have David Duke getting invited to the Zayed Center and Lyndon LaRouche, this is a scary thing when the mainstream institutions in that part of the world are embracing extreme anti-Semitism, anti-Christianity, and anti-Americanism.
All right, when we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about the Christian extremist fringe, learn a little bit more about those groups, and hope that that'll lead us further into our conversation about the difference between domestic terrorism and international terrorism. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. We invite you to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From bostonuniversity.org and make a bid for the news.
May I have that seat, please?
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, is a terrorist. Whether that person lives in this country or another country. With me on the program today, Brian Levin. He's professor of criminal justice and director of the Center on Hate and Extremism at California State University in San Bernardino. And with me here in Boston, Chip Erlay. He's senior analyst of Political Research Associates. That's a think tank studying the U.S. political right. He's co-author of a book called Right-Wing Populism in America. Chip, to you first. I have to confess, I get a little bit lost trying to make sense of this great big salad of groups that call themselves the Christian Identity and the Posse Comitatus and the Ku Klux Klan and the Church of Israel and the Army of God. And I don't know. I mean, are there divisions that I don't understand, or do they morph and switch and change and memberships go up and down?
Well, they do morph and switch and change, and memberships vary, and sometimes they build coalitions and sometimes they attack each other. So they're just like on the political left, on the political right, there are social movements and political movements. They have their organizations. They have leaders that come and go. Clearly, right now, a lot of the organized right-wing groups that are race-hate groups or white supremacist or anti-Semitic are in a bit of a disarray. But it doesn't mean that there aren't, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of people who really think that the government is run by some kind of secret conspiracy, maybe Jewish, and are really thinking in terms of having to resist the authority of the government. There's probably 5 million people in the country who are suspicious that the government is manipulated by secret elites and planning some kind of tyranny, a much larger group. So it's important to understand that unlike some countries in the Middle East where conspiracy thinking and anti-Semitism has a much more major role in the public discourse, that's not the case in the United States. These groups are much smaller in the United States. But in the 1920s, if you wanted to be elected to public office, say, in the state of Ohio or Indiana, you would be in the Ku Klux Klan. It was a very, very large popular movement in the 1920s in this country.
Brian, if we go back to the early to mid-90s and the times of Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing and Waco and Ruby Ridge, I mean, that was a period of time when a lot of these organizations and what they claim to believe in became public. People were talking a lot about it. People don't talk as much about those groups anymore. Is that because we're distracted with Iraq and fighting in the Middle East, or have they really, sort of gone down in profile?
Well, I think there are several variables. First, there were some factors historically that took place. You had a quiescent period with the racist hard edge of the right wing. I'm talking about extremists, not mainstream conservatives. You also had the LA riots, the decline of the Soviet Union, Waco, Ruby Ridge, and international cooperation with regard to the first Persian Gulf War. That led to a movement which also was fueled by the fact that mainstream conservatives were run out of office. So there was this attempt by extremists to try to appeal to disenfranchised mainstream conservatives. However, because these extremists had violence behind them, and many but not all of them were white supremacists, it turned off long-term these mainstream conservatives, especially after Oklahoma City. And what we saw is the movement contract back to the most extreme elements again. It's not as widespread. It was really growing. There was a time, and I think Chip would agree, in 93, 94, where the growth was alarming, where you'd have, town meetings where people would be against the federal government. Now what's so interesting is we're starting to see on the left this coalition of individuals who are revolutionary and believe they're disenfranchised, and they're starting anti-capitalist movements and anti-international, anti-corporate movements. And
oh, Brian,
also,
there's a difference between throwing a brick through a Starbucks window, which I don't approve of, and blowing up a building or sending a jet into the Pentagon.
I think if you believe that the left, the hard left here, groups like ERISA, are going to remain so-called nonviolent when it comes to attacks against persons, I think you're mistaken. We've seen what's happened in Europe. I do agree there are differences historically. I do believe that the biblically justified fanatical religious violence of the hard violent right is different and more likely to target people. But I think the left makes a big mistake when they are a bit of apologists for left-wing terrorists who have just destroyed millions of dollars worth of property in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania.
Well, I'm not an apologist for any kind of terrorism, and I think it's very important for people to speak out against any kind of violent intimidation that involves terrorism. But I think in this country, for many years, the FBI completely ignored the fact that the single largest terrorist group in America, in terms of numbers of incidents, were right-wing Protestant evangelicals, a tiny portion of which carried out acts of terrorism against reproductive rights clinics.
Let's go to the calls, and we'll pick this up after we get a chance to hear from some people who've been waiting. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us. Let's go first to Wilton, North Carolina. Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing today?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Well, I just would like to say that I have a lot of friends up in the area of North Carolina, and I've spent a lot of time up there, and I'm only 30 years old. A lot of my teenage and wilder days I spent up there, and there are a lot of right-wingers up there, and there are some fanatics up there. I've heard of rumors of blowing up bridges up there, and there is a lot of support for this man up there, but a lot of them feel that he is already found guilty before he is tried. A lot of people feel like he does not have a chance of getting a fair trial.
And, you think that's true as well, Chris?
I do feel like that. I don't agree with what he has been accused of. I feel like if he is guilty, he should definitely pay the price and do the time or whatever. But I feel like it would be very difficult for him to be fairly represented and found, you know, not guilty or whatever by a jury of his peers. And
Chris, let me ask you a question. Do you have questions about the hundreds of people who are locked up at Camp X-Ray in Guantanamo? I mean, are they, you know, guilty before they're innocent in exactly the same way that we're talking about Rudolph?
I really do. I feel like that has been shuffled, put on the back burner in the media for the purpose of we are probably holding a lot of innocent men there that are there just because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I do believe that our system needs to be changed and looked at, but it seems like we've gotten so far involved in the big roundup of Muslim or Islamic, you know, people that it's just not it just does not give them a fair chance whatsoever. And okay, I honestly feel bad for a lot of the situations that they've been put through.
Let's, if we can, Chris, go back to Rudolph. Are you saying that the man should not have been hunted and arrested?
Well, I feel like the money and the resources that were put, this awful amount of money that were put toward finding him and capturing him in the millions of dollars is just ridiculous. And I feel like a lot of the folks up there, including myself, it kind of drives a wedge between them and the government because all the money that is put forth to this one man to find him.
And Chip Berlay here in the studio, you were saying that they could have spent more money. They should have worked harder at trying to find this person.
Well, I think they could have worked harder. I think they actually did try to find him. But I would agree with the caller that if he's going to get a fair trial, that trial should be moved to another state entirely. And I think that we've gone too far in rounding up people we suspect of being terrorists, and we need to come back into some kind of balance around the issue of civil liberties. And I think
exactly.
A lot of Americans feel
exactly.
that way.
Exactly. And by the grace of God, that I was born in this country under, you know, quite civil ways, but I definitely feel like they're not getting a fair trial. They won't get a fair trial. Rudolph won't get a fair trial, and it's sad that our government and our judicial system has leaned definitely toward finding the person or the person being found guilty before they're even tried, especially with the way the media is today. This poor little town of Murphy has been swamped with the media frenzy. And
yeah, it happens.
It does happen, and it's sad that, I mean, every channel you turn to, that's what people want to see. They want to see doom and gloom, and, well, not everybody, but it's just crazy and sad that that's the way it works these days. And
Chris, I want to thank you for your call. I have to move along.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and John's joining us. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Good. I think that domestic terrorists are probably as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than international terrorists in that they can move amongst us so easily. That's one reason. And the other reason is I'm not so sure that that they don't necessarily, to some degree, represent, for instance, the views of some of our people in government, for instance, a John Ashcroft.
Well, that's going pretty far. I mean, this guy's supposed to uphold the law here. He may have some deeply held Christian beliefs, but he's not strapping plastic explosives around himself.
I understand that, sure. I mean, it may not be that extreme, but I don't necessarily, I would think, though, that, or my perception is that he shares some of the, at least, basic tenets or some of the basic beliefs of some of the extreme right. And
so you're saying that this government won't take a good hard look at these extreme Christian militants because there's some kind of shared beliefs there?
I'm saying that.
All right, Brian Levin
here.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. That's ludicrous. And one thing that I'm really troubled by is the kinds of attacks that we're seeing. Harken back to the attacks that we saw against Janet Reno and President Clinton. There is no way, as sympathetic as John Ashcroft might be, and I certainly have disagreements with him on various issues, that one can even put in the same sentence him with a domestic terrorist. In fact, he has been quite vigorous in going after hate crimes. He's been quite vigorous in his public statements with regard to attacks on abortion clinics. I think one thing that September 11th has done has caused the Justice Department to recognize that terrorism is terrorism is terrorism. And because there might be some issue orientation, that doesn't mean that because you might have sympathy on an issue that you believe that the means of going to war with the democratic institutions of our society are justified. And I'm just offended by that. And there's no way that John Ashcroft or the Justice Department or the FBI, people who I work with from time to time, are anything but disgusted by people like Rudolph or Mr. Wagoner or any of these people that cause violence against abortion providers.
John, back to you.
Well, I mean, that's your perception and that's your reality. My perception is somebody who sits on the outside of that, having not worked with them, is somewhat different than that. And I appreciate your view. I mean, I respect your view. But in my own perception, I don't necessarily think there'll be the same kind of vigor applied to persecution or prosecution of those on the extreme right as there will be, for instance, of against people like the alleged Muslim terrorists that exist in the camps and et cetera.
All right, Chip.
But I think you have to make an important differentiation, and that is that I don't think it's sympathy for the cause of these hard right violent extremists that is responsible for perhaps a differential in resource allocation. The problem is that we have an international network that is better financed, that is seeking to use weapons of mass destruction, that at certain levels is much better organized and has much greater reach than the individuals who are as horrible and as fanatical as any individual al-Qaeda person. But the network, the institutions, the support from governments like Iran, it's different, and it makes the problem a lot different, and I don't think it's
You're saying
it's
the government needs to use more resources against someone like al-Qaeda because there are millions of dollars in support being funneled into that group from various agencies, and they're more dangerous as a result of that, Brian. Am I hearing – is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Now, come on. Timothy McVeigh drove a truck full of fertilizer and blew up a building. A bunch of guys with box cutters stole planes and flew them into buildings. You don't need gigantic multinational infrastructure to do this. I think the government should treat everybody alike who's a terrorist and also pay attention to civil liberties. And I do think that there's a problem with apocalyptic thinking and an anti-Muslim bias in the Justice Department all the way up to the top with John Ashcroft.
Chip, I agree that the individual terrorist or the individual cell has tremendous access to significant weapons that can cause damage. But the networks are different. The reach is different. The financing is different. And I think that you're inaccurate when we're talking about the movements themselves and the organizations behind them having the same capabilities. It's much different. Certainly, by the way, I agree with Chip that you can have someone like Timothy McVeigh go out today and commit a horrible act of terrorism. But the network, the financing, and the capabilities are not as great.
All right. We'll go a little bit further with that later on. I want to try and get one more call in before our next break. So we'll go to Carrollton, Kentucky. Len's on the line. Hi, Len.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
I love your show. Listen to it every chance I get.
Great.
I'm a Christian Israel identity believer who differs completely from the stereotype that is presented in the media often.
Can you tell me in two sentences or less exactly what being a Christian Israel identity believer means to you?
We believe that the British and European people are the lost tribes of Israel, and that God selected us as a servant people to take the gospel to the whole world, and that rather than being like these hate groups, we believe that God is absolutely sovereign and that he will eventually restore all of his creation. That is, he will save all of mankind.
Now, you so God's that, covenant is with white people then, right?
Right. What do you think of blacks? What do you think of African Americans?
I have some good black friends. I love them, and God's going to save them just like everybody else.
But does God have a covenant with white people from Europe?
That's right.
Yes. The British is the word British is Hebrew for covenant man.
Right. So don't you think, like, black people would feel that was kind of racist, and maybe some of us white people?
I have a good black friend right around the corner I shared this with, and the fact that we are we're given the commission to be servants to the rest of mankind. And the way this has been distorted is that one of our ministers has been targeted by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and often when he speaks, we get picketed by people who say that he teaches this seed line doctrine and hate message and everything, and he teaches exactly the opposite. And when he has even tried to meet with these people in private to discuss it, they won't even talk with him.
Lynn, tell me what you think of the topic we're discussing this hour, whether or not domestic terrorists, someone like Eric Robert Rudolph, should get the same measure of the law as al-Qaeda terrorists.
I think any terrorist should be treated as a terrorist, whether he's a person like Mr. Rudolph or the al-Qaeda or the Israeli government or the U.S. government.
So from your perspective, violence is an unacceptable means of pushing any particular point of view.
Absolutely.
And you get in trouble because there are people within Christian Identity who embrace violence.
Yes, and we are totally opposed to those people. And that what I'm saying is we don't like being tarred with that brush. Because we abhor the violence. These are some loving Christian people who love all of mankind. And I just want to set the record straight. We don't very often get a public soapbox like this to say, hey, don't call us all that way.
All right, Lynn, thanks for your call.
Thank you for the opportunity. Love your show again. Bye-bye.
1-800-423-8255 for you to join our conversation about the difference between domestic terrorism, what motivates those groups, international terrorism, whether or not the government response to both is appropriate and equal. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the 10 o'clock news on WB56. Clear and concise with the most important
099287.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Telephone numbers 1-800-423-TALK. In this hour, conversation about terrorism, domestic and international, the differences and the distinctions. With me in the studio, Chip Berlay, senior analyst with Political Research Associates. And joining us from California, Brian Levin. He's a professor of criminal justice and director of the Center on Hate and Extremism at California State University. And Brian, I'm thinking of what Len was saying and trying to place that in context of how, you know, the media and the nation regards international terrorism and national terrorism. And it occurs to me that there's a lot of gray area here that when we talk about, you know, for example, Islamic fundamentalists, we make a straight line equation to those that are militants or terrorists or willing to use those kind of tactics. And that's not necessarily the case. And the same gray area exists in this country as well.
Yeah, but I think there's an important distinction. Firstly, with that last caller, you know, these people whitewash, and I think your listeners might be getting a wrong impression. These people believe the 14th Amendment, which granted equal protection and citizens to blacks, is illegitimate. These people regard Jews as either the spawn of Satan, a product of Eve and the serpent, or the kinder, gentler version is they're just evil. And they use the symbology of Protestant evangelical churches to kind of whitewash their image. I used to work at Southern Poverty Law Center. We did a lot of work in looking at who these bigots are, and I can assure you that if SPLC labels an identity church, it is what it is. With regard to your saying that we kind of beeline with regard to the Islamic radical militants as opposed to the ones that we have here who are Christian Identity, here's the thing. In the United States, every mainstream Protestant and Catholic denomination regards Christian identity as a heresy. The difficulty is, in certain parts of the world, Islam is being used and twisted and contorted for political and violent ends, so that if you read Ayman al-Zahari and then put the chief cleric of Riyadh, such as Cleric Sheikh, and read their statements together, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
But, Brian, that's all I'm saying, is that in the same way that Islam is used, Christianity is used as a cover for a great range of warped and twisted ideas. And
undeniably.
Islam gets blindsided by that, as does Christianity.
Yes, but I think you're missing an important point, and that is, in many of these countries, unlike the United States, in many of these countries, the mosque, the media, and the government are all tied in together. You don't get anything on the media in Saudi Arabia without the government support, and the clerics in Saudi Arabia are paid. So you have the institutional force mm-hmm. of all those three working together, and you have a promotion, a horrible promotion of anti-Christianity, anti-Semitism, and anti-Americanism, which I do not believe is representative of what Islam is. But the fact of the matter is we have neo-Nazi materials being remanufactured in parts of the Middle East. And that's a fact.
Brian, go back to the lines, because we have a number of people who want to
sure.
join us. To James now, who's calling in from Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Good, thank you. Appreciate you taking my call. I wanted to talk about it feels disingenuous to me to talk about the separation of Christian identity from evangelical right. It feels like there is a continuity of ideology embedded in the Christian right that is exploited, certainly by Christian identity, but they do overlap. My concern about evangelical Christianity, although I admire many of the people in the movement, is that they preach in their churches a lot of hatred of people outside of the church in order to bind the community together. And it's the same way Saddam Hussein talks anti-Americanism in Iraq in order to bind those people together. I think that from my perspective, there is a continuity of escalating violence from the hatreds in the church to the hatred in the culture. And I think that evangelical Christians should think about that as they go about their business.
Well, but you have to remember that there are evangelical Christians that are progressive and promote gay rights and support a woman's right to choose. So when we talk about evangelical Christians, we need to be very careful. We're talking about evangelical Christians in this sense as if they're all part of some Christian coalition kind of effort to take away rights from gay people or stop abortion. And it's not fair to lump all Christian evangelicals into a conservative box, either politically or evangelically. And then we really have to make a distinction between ideology or theology and what people do, their acts, because even a lot of people who don't agree with abortion condemn violence. So we have to be much clearer about what we're saying here. And even with Within Christian identity, there are different ranges of racism and anti-Semitism, and there are people within Christian identity that don't believe in violence. We need to be very clear that what's wrong here is apocalyptic demonization. What's wrong here is fundamentalism that claims to speak for God and be the only religion. We have to be against religions that claim they have the right to eradicate their opponents.
You know,
those are the distinctions.
When we were originally talking about some of the most anti-American rhetoric that was a part of the Muslim world, a year, 18 months ago, and the government was talking about mounting this campaign to try and change people and talk about, you know, the America that they wanted the rest of the world to understand. I'm listening to you, Chip, and thinking to myself, that same kind of let's put out the other message is not isn't really used in this country, perhaps in the way that it should be. Maybe it just wouldn't be heard. It'd be just a propaganda and brushed aside.
Well, I think there's a lot of money to be made on other kinds of talk radio of demonizing people, whether it's big tax and spend Democrats or gays and lesbians, or, you know, in some areas of the country, you can turn on shortwave radio and get really vicious anti-Semitic kinds of talk radio that really shouldn't even be on shortwave legally. Mm-hmm. So the dilemma here is that as a country, I don't think we're taking on the fact that there are movements that are spewing a kind of rhetoric that some people will interpret as permission to go and carry out acts of violence, and in some cases, acts of violence in the name of God.
But I think we also have to, I think we also have to be careful, though, particularly on the left, of demonizing Christians. There are plenty of Christians of goodwill who are against abortion, who are against gay rights, but do not remove themselves from society. They deeply believe in a pluralistic society. They deeply believe in dialogue. And yes, Chip, I agree with you. There are hard edges to the way debates are framed, and some of the talk radio is very bad. But there are people on the left, too, who I believe demonize Christians of goodwill because they refuse to agree to disagree on issues.
Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. David's on the line. Hi, David.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Listen, I'll be brief. I think that it's important to make this distinction between domestic terrorists and foreign terrorists, is that foreign terrorists typically commit suicide acts during their act of terrorism. That, to me, speaks of a certain desperation where they're willing to give up their lives to change a certain situation. Domestic terrorists are usually, we used to talk about the lone wolf kind of attacks where these guys would go out, they make an attack, they hit somebody from behind, and then they run away. That, to me, speaks more toward an act of anger and frustration, but not willing to sacrifice your own life for what you believe in.
Brian.
Well, Timothy McVeigh stated that he was prepared to die at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing. We've seen people like Ben Smith from the World Church of the Creator who killed himself as opposed to being taken. But I think that many of the bigoted terrorists here in the United States are prepared to die, they just would prefer not to. And the one thing that I think is important, too, that we have to address, and President Bush talked about it this morning, is that we can't allow in various places this seepage through the cultural institutions, through the religion, and through the state to glorify homicide terrorists. The Saudi ambassador to the United Nations glorified a female terrorist. In many parts of the West Bank, you have posters and billboards. These people become folk heroes. And what we have to do is we have to address these very far-reaching cultural issues which enable these kinds of attacks to have a folkloric effect on vast movements.
A culture where our own president talks about a crusade against evil empires and despots and demonic, you know. The apocalyptic language of demonization goes all the way to the top in America and all the way back to the settlers in the colonial period.
Chip,
apocalyptic
Chip,
thinking
well,
is
but
part
Chip,
and parcel
I,
of America.
I agree, but you're missing my point, Chip. And what I'm saying is President Bush does not say that Americans should go into other countries and blow themselves up at pizza parlors or ice cream shops. And President
no, bombing is much more nice from airplanes high in the sky.
I think
missiles are a much more appropriate way to rain terror on people.
We have in a civilized society rules of war where we don't target civilians. As Oliver Wendell Holmes said, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled upon and being kicked. And to equate military action, which we might disagree on, with people going into pizza parlors and
ice cream shops,
is ridiculous.
That's not the point. The point is apocalyptic rhetoric stirring up people to carry out acts of violence. And I think if you're going to complain about apocalyptic rhetoric, which I do, I'm going to say that we need to clean house all throughout American society.
I mean,
I agree.
The other thing about Eric Robert Rudolph is that the guy ultimately, 5 years after he disappeared, was found rooting around in a dumpster. I mean, this is not somebody who was getting a whole lot of support necessarily, you know, from other than a few people who might have known where his camp was.
No, the size of the group of people on the right who would carry out acts of violence is relatively small in this country at this time. There have been different historic periods when that hasn't been true.
But do those people deserve the same harsh treatment that this country has come to or, you know, a large number of people in this country have come to believe is appropriate in dealing with the Islamic terrorists.
No, they deserve the treatment specified under the Constitution, preserving our civil liberties. I'm saying that we've gone way too far. We need to protect ourselves from terrorism, but we need to also pay attention to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And I think that because of our fear of foreign terrorism, we've allowed our concern over civil liberties to be pushed way aside.
Absolutely, but the scope, the capabilities, and the spread of the hatred throughout the world of the United States, if you look at the Pew Report, which just came out today, it's in the Boston Globe, where large majorities all over the world hate America, the scope of the hatred, the capabilities, and the support of governments of terrorism makes resource allocation has to be spent on international terrorism.
Yeah, but the founders created a Constitution and Bill of Rights that was supposed to apply even when we were scared.
So absolutely. No one's disagreeing with you there.
So are you saying that the founders would say that the use of the Patriot Act and the use of the certain measures under Homeland Security go way too far?
Well, I don't channel for dead men, but yes, I think that if you're looking historically, these are documents that were prepared at a time when threat of violence from outside was a very real aspect, and yet they preserved these liberties.
And if they're being used then in the pursuit of domestic terrorists, is that also...
It's wrong against foreign people. It's wrong against people suspected of foreign terrorism,
right.
And it's wrong against people suspected of domestic terrorism. And it's wrong to assume that Eric Rudolph can get a fair trial in North Carolina. I think his venue should be changed.
He's in Alabama.
That's right. They've actually moved him to Birmingham for trial. But I think there's a problem here in terms of understanding this balance. There's a lot of evidence against Mr. Rudolph.
We're talking in abstract. One of the things I think you have to recognize is there is a tremendous threat from international terrorists. And that does not mean we should necessarily violate civil liberties. But for too long, and I think many people would agree, the government pre-9/11 did not pay attention to things that they should have. And now I think we have to allocate resources and attack this in a multifaceted way, which might include military action when appropriate.
It's a balance. I'm saying that there are two factors here that need to be taken into consideration. And for a long time, we didn't pay enough attention to international and domestic terrorism. And now we're paying attention in the wrong way. And I don't think you find a lot of these terrorists by the kind of policies that we're pursuing.
All right. Interesting to hear the different ways of looking at it. Chip, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thank
Chip
you.
Relay is a policy analyst with Political Research Associates in Somerville, Massachusetts. Brian Levin, thanks for your time.
Thank you. You know, I'm actually friends with this guy.
I know. Hey, I owe you dinner.
Brian is a professor of criminal justice and director of the Center on Hate and Extremism at California State University in San Bernardino. Earlier in the program, we talked with Joel Burgess. He's a reporter for the Hendersonville, North Carolina Times News. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
This is WBUR. Hour 2 of The Connection is up next with Dick Gordon, and they'll be discussing My Brother's Keeper, what happens when one good brother and one bad brother and their worlds collide. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Boston Botanicals, offering comprehensive interior plant service and design to businesses in Greater Boston and proprietors of a unique flower shop in downtown Boston. WBUR welcomes the Capitol Steps to Boston on June 17th through the 22nd.